Long time, I'm going to say friends, because I've done a lot of his college games. I can't say I've drank a lot of beer with him or anything like that, but he's somebody that everybody knows around the country when it comes to men's soccer. He is Sasha Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland. He's won numerous national titles, placed many a player in Major League Soccer, and he joins us now. Sasha, how are you?
I'm great, Glenn. Great to be with you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. And I know COVID's posed a lot of problems for college and the college game, and really just want to kind of get your take on how it's gone so far this year. What are the plans for NCAA soccer in the spring? And just kind of give you a minute or two here to kind of get us up to date.
Well, as most of your viewers or listeners will know, all of the college fall sports got canceled late this summer. On the eve of a preseason, we were told there's going to be no college fall sports, at least in the Big Ten. There was a few conferences that played American football, college football, and the ACC and some of the Southern SEC, Big 12, all continued to play. And they played men's and women's soccer, actually. But the 90% of the college soccer programs of both the men's and women's side had their fall seasons postponed. And now the NCAA announced in mid-September that we will have a spring NCAA championship, which we're delighted with. And that championship looks like it's set to start on February 3rd and culminate with a College Cup in Cary, North Carolina, between May 13th and the 17th. And interestingly, both the men's and women's College Cups will be at the same location between May 13th and 17th. So we're kind of excited about that, excited to maybe have a national championship in good weather. And hopefully at that point, we have a vaccine and maybe we'll get some fans in the stands.
Yeah, so that's Cary, North Carolina. That's a great choice for the national championships, and it's always been a great spot. Tell me a little bit about how this affects recruiting now, because you may have some players who want to extend their college career. I think that gets a little nebulous for some people.
Yeah, it's created a lot of anxiety, confusion, uncertainty for the coaches, the players, and the incoming recruits. So when the season got pushed into the spring, the NCAA followed up what they did last year with college spring sports, and virtually every athlete that's playing any college sport this year is going to get an extra year of eligibility. So this entire year, because there'll be shortened seasons, interrupted seasons, and teams will play anywhere from a few games to maybe a full season, the NCAA has unilaterally basically come out and said, this is basically a free year. Now, that sounds great in theory, but it's very complicated. The majority of men's soccer players are on partial scholarships and some are on no scholarships. So a lot of these kids who will maybe get their degree or graduate or look to move on to play professionally or go and get a job, they probably will not take advantage of that additional year. But in some cases, kids will go to grad school and go to different places. So right now there's quite a bit of movement and decisions coaches have to make in terms of roster management. And it's not easy, but it's a good thing the NCAA did really to provide that relief, but it has created some complications, but I think we can work through those.
Yeah, because in the case of my nephew, he had his final year in the fall, didn't get to play, and you know he's going to end up graduating. I don't think he's going to stick around for an extra year because he's going to have his degree and get out into the work world. So very challenging. We're talking to Sasha Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland. Now, look, you've been a tremendous proponent for the college game. You've been a tremendous proponent of making it a split semester sport where you play in both the fall and spring. So I'm thinking COVID-19 has probably helped this process maybe a little bit.
Well, it's hurt, and I think eventually will help. In the short run, it's hurt the process because we were scheduled for an April 2019 vote on a two-semester model known as the 21st century model. And we had really made so much headway that we were starting to feel like we had the votes to possibly get this passed. And obviously, when the world shut down in mid-March, the Division I Council really pushed all the legislations back. So we rightfully said, let's give us another year. Let's hold off and see where it's at. So just earlier today, I was met with my 21st century committee of the coaching body leaders across the country to really restart the conversation and see if it makes sense to get this back up for a vote in April. I think there's some positive developments in the fact that, for example, the ACC this year is playing the split season model. And we have three major women's conferences are playing the split season model. It's not quite the same spread out and well thought out 21st century model, but I think they're going to show that it can be done and perhaps it should be done. However, there are some economic impacts of the COVID crisis that may make us pause for a little bit longer, because right now there is real financial burden on every single campus. There is furloughs at the NCAA, conference of sophomores all over campus, and there is a tightening of the belt. So there is this sort of reduction mode happening, survival mode across a lot of college campuses. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't move forward to the 21st century model, and we are going to be working within conferences and the NCAA to see if it makes sense to push this for a vote in April, or maybe we push it back a month or two. But it's a great idea, Glenn. It's for the players. It's for the game. It makes sense. And I am passionate, and I will not let go until the day we get this passed.
No, we know that from you. Now, I just want to bring up, like, Angela Kelly at Texas. They're excited because they're going to have a spring season. Yeah. They got to play a limited Big 12 schedule. Yeah. So in some ways, does this kind of prove or pose as a litmus test maybe for the women's game also to maybe get a little bit more heavily involved in a two-semester 21st century model, as you said?
Yeah, I think so. I think the women have been a little bit behind. They haven't been as proactive as the men looking at this 21st century model. But I do think that, you know, you got some of the most powerful conferences, as you mentioned. Ange at Texas is going to have a chance to experience, you know, playing a championship part of their season in the spring. So they played some games in the fall. I think what most coaches will recognize is if you can space out the time between games to have the proper rest and recovery, to have the proper preparation leading up to a game. I mean, it's wonderful. You know, there's way too many college kids getting hurt and just surviving rather than thriving in that experience. And then the games sometimes don't mirror the quality that they should exhibit. And finally, you know, I'm excited to see what a championship in May looks like. You know, whether we have fans or not, I just am excited to see what that looks like, because I do believe we're going to have a really good championship experience this year. And I think it's going to get a lot more of the women's coaches and players, I think, much more excited about this in time. But whether the women jump on or not, the men are committed to pushing this through. And we will be respectful of a timeline. We'll play it smartly of when we push. But we're going to eventually play over two semesters in college soccer.
Do you have some coaches that are adamant about not wanting to do the split semester? I'm just very curious about what the makeup of that would be. And, of course, we're not going to reveal anybody, but does that happen?
No, not really. On the men's side, you know, we've had surveys done for almost 5 years now. We're about 92, 95% in favor on the men's side. And I think even the one or two or select coaches that have some reservations, it has a lot to do with maybe their own personal weather conditions or maybe budget conditions. So it's a very sort of, I guess I don't want to use the word narrow, but it's relative to their own world. But really, we've got 95%. I mean, it's hard to get 95% people to agree that the sky is blue, you know, on a sunny day. Yeah,
good point. Very good. That's the smartest thing that'll be said in this interview, I think. No question about it. We're talking to Sasha Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland, really interested in this. Now look, you mentioned this is the right thing for the players, but this is great for coaches, coaching education, men like yourself that have devoted your life to not only taking players to the highest level that they can possibly go in soccer, but also to prepare them for life. Let's face it, you are a huge mentor to all the young people that come through your program.
You know, Glenn, one of my mentors was Bob Gansler. And Bob Gansler always referred to us coaches as teachers in shorts and T-shirts. And we in college soccer in particular really understand the role of being teachers and coaches. But we are also, responsible for growing the game. And I've taken it upon myself as one of the leaders is to find a better way. I think it's easy sometimes to get stuck in a way and keep doing it over and over. It doesn't make sure it's right. And we saw an opening about 7 years ago when the NCAA came out and they said, we care about student athlete welfare. And we said, well, if you really care, then we're going to cash in that check. We're going to bring it to the table. And so we've made a lot of progress. And I think right now we're in a good place. We think we have a lot of momentum. We'll get there. I think the women are coming along. I wish they were with us. I think we'd be in upper 90. We'd pass it. But we're, it's a slow grind. We'll get there.
Sasha, before I let you go, I just want to take you into you as a coach now. And coaches will have to change now. I mean, it's not about just a little rest and recovery and on to your next game. I mean, now you're going to have more time. Maybe your scouting is going to become different. You have the ability to take specific topics maybe in certain training. I mean, it's going to really be kind of different, won't it?
Oh, different in such a good way. In such a great way. I mean, to really be able to number one, do things with when you know your players are mentally and physically refreshed and prepared is an amazing thing. The second part is, you know, you're going to have players be able to compete for playing time in training. Right now, we have such a short preseason and games come so fast and furious that a lot of times, you know, if you're not in the starting group at the beginning, it's hard to get into the lineup. We also have players who will take an injury, Glenn, and they won't feel like they have to rush back and play because they might miss four games in a 10-day period. So you have so many positives, but from a tactical preparation, from, you know, you have times now. If you want to maybe, you know, switch into a 3-5-2 out of your 4-3-3 or prepare, you know, how you're going to press, you have some time to really do that, you know, to counter press these things. And a lot of times right now, it's kind of, we're doing it through video. We're just kind of like trying to cram. And now you can actually teach and you can prepare and you can go. And I think I'm excited about it. I know the coaches are, if we get to that point.
Sasha, would it be fair for me to say there were points in your career based on the condensed college schedule where you looked at your team and you were thinking about changing something tactically that might have been a little bit different and included some different things, and then you kind of said, nah, I can't do it at this point. It's just too condensed.
Well, it happened all the time. In fact, you know, we all try to have at least 1 week in the middle of the year where there was no midweek game, and we kind of look forward to that week, and maybe that was the week that we would incorporate maybe a little bit of a change, a tweak, an adjustment to prepare a team. Because, you know, when you're playing, you know, every Friday, Tuesday, Saturday, you know, with every 3-4 days or Fridays, you just have no time. You're just kind of recovering, and you know, you work a lot on the mind at that point to try to get the kids in a, you know, good place so they can feel they can succeed. But, you know, you have injuries. You know, I've said this publicly so many times. You know, I feel like I have one of the top programs in college soccer, and, you know, we draw a lot of fans to our games. But I feel it's unfair sometimes for fans that come to a lot of the midweek games or to come to the third game in 7 days or the fourth game in 10 days because you're not really seeing the best that the players can offer, you know, but you're seeing incredible effort and you know, just a lot of good things, but it just not doesn't feel like a really good soccer game. We saw with MLS this year when they had to cram in about a 6-week window where they played almost every 3-4 days, and you could just see that the quality really dropped off. And then now you watch some of the playoff games and there's some time in between, and you see teams that are really well prepared, and it looks and feels like a really good level soccer. And that's what I want for college soccer.
And that's why I'm going to let you go, because we got in about an hour and 5 minutes. It all kicks off. Three games in a row tonight. It's going to be a great night. We appreciate you being on the show, as always. What a proponent for the game in this country and looking at it, not from the standpoint of just winning.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. That's Sasha Sarofsky, number of titles at Maryland. And by the way, there's Maryland players in action all over the Major League Soccer playoffs. Just going to close you out here on Advantage BMW in Midtown. Thanks to Stephen Prather down there supporting this show. You know, I bought and leased from them for years. What a machine. Drove it all the way to the East Coast to New Jersey to see my parents. 23 hours. Fantastic ride. They're going to get you set up, sales, service, finance. It is Advantage BMW. Remember this, though, Midtown. Advantage BMW Midtown. Advantage BMW Houston.com. We'll take a break. We got more to come.
Call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.
You surf the web, there's lots to be wary of. Hackers, predators.
Thanks for your banking information, Mary. Mark, thank you for all your passwords. What happened? I can't see anything. They must be using IP Vanish.
IP Vanish utilizes military-grade encryption and works worldwide using over 1,500 servers in 70 locations. For a limited time, secure unmetered devices on one account and save 73% off an annual subscription. Go to ipvanish.com/radio. ipvanish.com/radio.
You like your burger medium well, your peanut butter crunchy, and your mattress firm. It's the little things that make you, you. And you deserve a Medicare plan that fits your unique needs. That's why United Healthcare is offering more plan options than ever, so you can find just the right plan for you. Call 1-800-362-8715. That's 1-800-362-8715 to get Medicare with more. Remember, Medicare annual enrollment ends December 7th.
Hey, it's Josh. Nothing's better than mouth-watering Texas barbecue at Cypress Trail Hideout, home of the award-winning Papa Charlie's Barbecue. Cypress Trail Hideout is currently taking orders for holiday packages. Smoked turkey, Cajun fried turkey, whole turkey breast, smoked pit hams, briskets, and racks of ribs. Plus, all your favorite fixins, too. To order, call 281-213-4136 or online at cypresstrailhideout.com.
Hey, soccer fans, a moment here for our presenting sponsor, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Now, John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Now, they're bilingual. You might get in a car accident, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, 18-wheeler. The Daspit Law Firm has you covered and will work for you 24-7, nights and weekends. Get the representation you need at the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. Proud sponsor of Soccer Matters.
Guys, I can personally attest to the increased energy, muscle mass, weight loss. It's very real when you are getting testosterone treatments. If you are low in testosterone, you may see a drop in libido, you may see depression, irritability, and even memory loss. Make sure that you get your levels tested at Men's T Clinic. Go to Men's T Clinic right now to find out if they can help you. Men's T Clinic is Houston's premier hormone treatment provider with 5 convenient Houston area locations. Go to mensteclinic.com. That's mensteclinic.com.
A smart guy once said, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. John Granato here. I'm a prolific planner, one of the all-time best planners. But enough about me. You, on the other hand, need to plan early, before the holidays, and order your basketball goal from Pro Dunk Hoops. You might want their fully portable Bear model, or perhaps the Pro Dunk Gold model, professionally installed on your driveway. Go to ProDunkHoops.com to order your goal today. It's the perfect plan. ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
The Press Box with Charlie, Joel, and Nick.
You know, you're going to be really hot in that thing. Zipped up, hooded sweatshirt.
I'm actually still fine right now, so you know what? Worry about yourself.
Looking out for you. Don't want you passing out halfway through.
That would be a first.
You do have a t-shirt or something on under there, right?
No, Charlie, just my nipples grazing against the soft inner lining of my sweatshirt.
All right, everyone else repulsed by that image. We get a commercial break to regather ourselves.
The Press Box, weekdays from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. on ESPN 97.5.
Real estate agents, are you tired of paying high commission splits to your broker? At NB Elite Realty, you get 100% of your hard-earned commission at closing. Plus, we offer low transaction fees, free investment training, exceptional support, and no hidden fees. Visit our website, nbeliterealty.com, or call 844-444-NBER for more information on how to join our winning team. Don't wait. Start your journey to financial freedom today with NB Elite Realty.
All right, final segment of the show is brought to you by Nebo Bandovic, the former leading scorer for the Houston Hotshots. Remember those days in the old Summit? Banging in goals. We had some CISL championship games there. 17,000 people for the indoor game, Houston Hotshots. Nebo wants to invite you to start your journey to financial freedom through real estate investing. After finishing his soccer career, he went on to build a real estate investment empire with a multi-million dollar portfolio, and he wants to teach you how to do the same. Follow Nebo at Nebo Bandovic on Instagram for daily investment tips, secrets, and more information on how to be mentored by the master himself through his VIP program. That is at Nebo, N-E-B-O-B-A-N-D-O-V-I-C on Instagram. All right, final segment of tonight from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Jonathan Tannenwald wrote a wonderful piece recently on the Philadelphia Union, their youth development program. Apparently, they've got a lot coming through the pipeline down in Philadelphia, and there was a lot of thought and vision that went behind this. Here is Jonathan Tannenwald. Now, Jonathan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Glenn. Thanks, as always, for having me on.
Yeah, we always appreciate having you on. I read with real interest, before we get into the Union Revolution playoff game, but I read with real interest the wonderful piece you did about really the owners of the Philadelphia Union, Jay Sugarman, Richie Graham, the vision that they had for producing an academy and their own players. And with Brendan Aaronson now being a guy that's going to end up going to Europe now at a fee of $6 million and the American player becoming more high profile overseas now,
It really seems like all stars are aligning for the Philadelphia Union when it comes to player development.
It's been really remarkable to watch. And, you know, it's funny. I've criticized this team a lot over the years for not spending money on top players and not really, you know, competing in the league to win games for a long time. And you've been following this team, Glenn, for as long as I have. My memory's right. You called their first ever home game down in Chester.
What a day that was. I'll never forget.
ESPN back in the day. You know, I've criticized them for a lot of things, but I've also, at the same time, I've always known that what they were doing with the youth academy was the right thing. And it was going to take a long time to pay off. And when they launched it back in 2013, I remember asking some of the folks who were involved then, how long do you think this is really going to take? Because I knew it was going to take a few years. And, I think they probably had some ideas, but maybe they didn't want to say it because it wasn't really a point in time with this team where the fans were really willing to hear, give us 3 to 5 years. But they did it anyway, and now finally, you know, in the last year or two, you've started to see guys come through this academy who've been really good. And then the question became, okay, you're developing really good academy players. Now can you go win a trophy? Whether that's the Open Cup, which they lost in Houston a couple of years ago, or now finally this year they won the Supporter Shield, and they proved that it could be done. Now, they not just because of the homegrown kids, but you've got a stellar goalkeeper in Andre Blake. And you got some really smart signings around the rest of the field. Jacob Blesnes and Kai Wagner on the back line. And Jamiro Montero in midfield has been outstanding. I think he's their best player. Jose Martinez at the 6. And, of course, Ala Bedoya, who's the captain. They've got all the pieces. Now, does it mean they're going to win MLS Cup? Not necessarily. This is the most crapshoot MLS Cup plan that I can remember of playoffs. Because of the balance and, obviously, the COVID implications. And it's all one game. We've already seen, I can't remember a crazier start to a playoffs than this one.
Oh, we've had 3 goals in stoppage time in games. And
3 games to penalties.
Single elimination, though, I think is great for finality. I mean, I really love it. Do you like it, Jonathan?
You know, I wasn't sold at first because I thought the coaches were all going to be defensive and try to not lose instead of playing to win. But I've come around on it. And, you know, we've gone through 7 games so far in these playoffs. None of them have been 1-0.
Yep.
Now, of course, that means on Tuesday probably all 3 of them will be, but, you know.
Let me reset this real quick. We're talking to Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer. We're talking Philadelphia Union. Let me take you into Jim Curtin, Ernst Tanner, and then the relationship with Jay Sugarman and Richie Graham, because it really seems like this 4 individuals are really, really on the same page with things. And that to me is vital.
I think they are. And Richie Graham, for folks who don't know, is one of the minority owners of the union and the guy who really bankrolls the youth academy. And the part of that academy is a full-time high school that the team runs in one of the northern suburbs of Philadelphia. And that's where all these kids have come through in recent years. Mackenzie Aronson, Anthony Fontana, a lot of all the guys who are coming up next year, they have 5 homegrown signings coming in next year. And Graham, I'll read you the quote that Richie gave me for this story that I wrote that was in Monday's Philadelphia Inquirer, and you can find it online at inquirer.com/soccer. Of course, folks who follow me on Twitter at The Goalkeeper, I've been tweeting it out all day. So, yep. Here's the quote from Richie Graham. If you look at other leagues across the world, they have already demonstrated this idea that talent can be identified, nurtured, showcased, and sold. There's no reason why the United States can't do that. There's no reason why MLS can't do that. Now, Glenn, you and I, and a lot of other people who've been following MLS for a very long time, have been calling on this league for years and years to understand the value of selling players. And here now finally is a team that is doing it, that is willing to do it, and is producing players that are good enough to command fees genuinely in the 7 figures, like the $6 million that Brendan Aaronson got, to go to Red Bull Salzburg, which for folks who don't know is the highest transfer fee for an American product of an MLS youth academy in league history. The only transfer fee higher for a homegrown player was Alphonso Davies, obviously to Bayern Munich. And it tells you something also. I think this is actually the more remarkable thing. That $6 million, Glenn, is the sixth largest transfer fee out of the league in league history. That's not a lot of money on the global stage, if you think about it. And it tells you how little selling MLS has done over the years. And now the club owners are finally coming around to it, I think partly because they see how much money's in it, finally. But the number of teams in the last few years that have been genuinely willing to sell have been the Red Bulls, Tyler Adams, Dallas with a bunch of their guys, as we know, and the Union. And it needs to be more, and it's, I get it. It's hard to convince people who are used only to the four main American sports, baseball, football, hockey, basketball. That never happens. The Astros, the Rockets, the Eagles, the Flyers don't develop players to sell them, trade them to other teams, you know? We're not used to that. But in soccer, that's the way it works. And not just because, or not just by MLS teams or French teams or Portuguese teams or Dutch teams that are not the really big ones, in quotes, you know? Every team in global soccer sells players. That's the way the sport is.
All right, let me do a reset here, Jonathan. Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer. We're talking about player development. Now, look, Mark McKenzie, supposedly the next guy to go. A couple of other things. Jim Curtin becomes the coach of the year. Andre Blake, the goalkeeper of the year. How important has Ernst Tanner been to this club when it comes to all the things involved? And then I want to take you into something different after that. If you could answer that in a minute.
Sure. Ernst Tanner has been very important. He's the guy who has really broken the doors open and made the connections to get these players sold. You know, Ernie Stewart was his predecessor as the sporting director of the Union. He's now at the national team. Ernie really built out the youth academy, and then he moved on to U.S. soccer. And the Union wanted to go out and find a new sporting director who could really make the connections to get these players sold. And Ernst Tanner, who came over from Red Bull Salzburg, was a big part of the Red Bull organization. He gets that whole pathway, you know, and he was at Hoffenheim in Germany before that, where he did a lot of the same thing.
So this is a signing with a bigger picture vision here. This isn't just to come into the Philadelphia Union and help the Union domestically in Major League Soccer. This is a signing here that is a far-reaching signing to Europe, connections, and moving players forward if in fact, they earn that ability to do that and they're saleable.
That's exactly right. And it's you know, you've seen a number of other teams in MLS in recent times, you know, hire sporting directors who have those connections, whether it's Axel Schuster in Vancouver. I certainly think Claudio Reyna in Austin obviously has those connections, we know.
Yep.
I hope that as Todd Ramos keeps doing better with the Dynamo, that they'll keep bringing young players through and sell them on. And then what's going to happen after that, we know, Glenn. It sounds paradoxical. If you don't follow soccer, it sounds paradoxical to say what I'm about to say, but it's the truth. More people are going to care about MLS as the league sells more of its top young players because they're going to want to know who's next and they're going to watch for that.
Yeah, no question about it. Now, talk to me a little bit about, let's go into the Union and New England who are going to play on Tuesday night. The Union have owned the New England Revolution. Is there any concern about, you know, that you feel coming from the players or from Jim Curtin about the fact that, okay, here we go again. Again, we're playing. This is the sixth time this year, the New England Revolution, law of averages. There is something a little bit strange about playing the same team all the time and now having to get them in a one-game single elimination knockout.
Oh, there's plenty of people who are worried. You have to go back, Glenn, to the early 2000s when you and I were kicking around the league and not a lot of other people were paying attention to find the days when teams played each other six times in a year. It's been a long time. And I don't think anybody is particularly happy about it, whether the fans of both teams or, you know, fans or both teams or whatever. But it is what it is. The Union are going to have to try to knock New England out here. And New England, as we saw, has all of its big guns firing. Carlos Gil, Gustavo Bow, and all the rest. And it's going to be tricky. You know, the Union have – This is the sixth time they've played this year, as we've said. The Union have won four, tied one so far, and only the most recent one was decided by more than one goal.
So what is it that the Union really have mastered in getting results over New England this year?
I couldn't tell you, to be honest with you. I'm not sure there's any secret sauce. I think they've just gone out and won the games. Because you think about it, they've won in Foxborough on the artificial turf. They've won in Chester. And they've won down in Orlando at the MLS's back tournament. Those are all very different environments. I don't know that there's a secret sauce to it. One thing I will say, New England hasn't been full strength for a lot of those games, but they were in the last one that the Union won 2-0 to clinch the supporter shield. Probably, obviously, a little extra oomph in the Union that day because they wanted to clinch the trophy. Yeah. But we're going to find out. And I'll tell you a guy, there's two guys who I'm going to be watching, and they're kind of obvious, but nonetheless. One is Brendan Aaronson, because next time, you know, the Union have home field advantage all the way through the playoffs. Either they're going to win it all, or if at some point they lose, whenever that is, it's his last game with the Union.
Yeah.
Because then he goes off to Salzburg. So he wants to play as many more games in this stadium as he possibly can before he leaves.
With Jesse Marsh, by the way, at Red Bull Salzburg. We're talking to Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer. Does a great job of covering the Union soccer in the United States. Jonathan, before I let you go, I want to ask you about the Union relevancy and how relevant they are in Philadelphia. I know we don't have the measuring stick of fans coming to stadiums, but look, you're a part of the media there. You're one of the media members in the country that I believe really does provide a lot of critical analysis, which I think is healthy pressure needed in every market for these teams. But in your opinion, in your mind, how much has the relevancy grown, and where do they fit with the Eagles and the Flyers and everybody else?
They don't. I hate to say it, but they don't. I mean,
is that a concern? I mean, does the organization talk about it?
Of course it is. But you've got so many people in power in this town who only care about what they care about. Whether it's at the, you know, I don't want to throw my own paper under the bus, so I'm not gonna. But whether it's at the TV stations or the sports talk radio or whatever, they only care about what they care about and their core audience. And it's not even, you know, Philadelphia as a whole is changing. It's a lot more diverse than it used to be. There's a lot more Spanish spoken in this town, Vietnamese and Chinese and all kinds of Korean and Portuguese and all kinds of other languages spoken in this town than there used to be when it was, you know, just a little parochial place on the, you know, it was a big city, but it was very parochial for a long time. And it's still an uphill battle. The one thing that I wonder, and we might never know, is if the stadium was in the city instead of in Chester, would it be a difference perception-wise? I think that might be part of it, but we'll never know.
Jonathan, as always, a big thank you for coming on the show. Keep up all the great writing. We really appreciate your work. Really enjoyed that article on the Philadelphia Union about their player development and the vision that had occurred there. And as always, thank you very much for coming on. And let's see if the Union will do it again to New England, and we'll get you back on the show.
My pleasure, Glenn. Keep an eye on Anthony Fontana, a guy who comes off the bench a lot for this team, but he's a Revs killer. He scored, I think, 5 or 6 of his career goals against New England specifically. And I think he could be a difference maker.
There you got it. Anthony Fontana. Keep an eye on him. Per Jonathan Tannenwald of the Philadelphia Inquirer. A big thank you, Jonathan, again, for coming on the show here tonight.